maybe owed some money. After 911 and 411, call 541. That's 727-541-1741. Call Gulfstream Motorsports for a diminished value report. Due to my 28 years experience in the auto salvage business, I'm very good with wrecks. So if your car's been involved in a wreck, call me for a diminished value report. Call 727-541-1741. You may be owed some money for the lost value of your repaired vehicle. And visit us at GulfstreamMotorsports.com.
Looking for car shows? Then look no further than flacarshows.com. On your computer or on your mobile device, flacarshows.com is a comprehensive list of automotive events, plus videos and news articles. Whether you're looking for car shows, cruise-ins, meetups, automotive festivals, cars and coffees, or anything else relating to an internal combustion engine, then this is a site for you. Check it out online or on your phone at flacarshows.com.
In 1978, I came to Europe to compete for the first time. It was pure driving. It was real racing. And that makes me happy.
Oh my goodness, this is fantastic!
I think we are watching the arrival of Ayrton Senna, a truly staggering talent.
He'll be ranked among the all-time greats.
How do you feel about being world champion?
It's not a bad feeling at all, is it?
Ayrton has a small problem. He thinks that he can't kill himself. And I think that's very dangerous.
We are competing to win. And if you no longer go for a gap, you're no longer a racing driver.
Senna Frost takes the lead. Senna is trying to go through on the inside.
I was treated like a criminal.
The best decision is my decision.
I can't stand this.
Walking away from the dark forces just doesn't become an option.
I was not going to give up.
So have any of your girlfriends ever asked you to go faster?
There was an energy, a force, a spirit. It was electrifying.
It was the last time either of them would be on the podium.
Ayrton ran out of luck.
There is a lot to go, a lot to learn, a lot to do. But I have plenty of time. Pure driving. Real racing. That makes me happy.
Hi, this is Bob Varsha. You're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
Okay, listeners, welcome. You are tuned into Nostalgic Radio and Cars. I'm your show host, Robert. Run your computers and Google Tantalk1340.com, and you can see us live here in the studios in downtown Clearwater. Don't forget to check out our website, GulfstreamMotorsports.com, where you can find out all about us. And if you've missed any of our past shows, 730 now, check out NostalgicRadioandCars.com, the archive page or the actual website. Anyway, hey, I want to welcome everybody. And you know what? For those of us on the West Coast, we are, I guess, bracing again for a, I think they call it a windstorm, potential hurricane or something of that nature. So, and as usual, you know, we don't know how bad it's going to be, but just in case, because some people say there's going to be a lot of rain, it's going to be quick, there's going to be a tidal surge and the usual stuff. So, but unfortunately, it's going to probably land someplace up in the north county or north part of the state. Anyway, on that note, we're all hanging in there, and I wish everybody the best of luck. Stay safe, stay dry, and make sure you stock up on some canned goods just in case. Nonetheless, that's my PSA stop, or my, what do they call it, public service announcement, something like that, right, Ed? Good evening, Ed. How you doing? Do we have our guests on, do we have our guests on the line? We do. Okay, well, we got two guests for you this evening. We had a couple special show, because there's a couple of really huge events coming up here in the next couple of weeks, and with a little luck, I should be attending both of them, but because they're within driving distance, so I'm delighted to welcome the show this evening, the communications director for the Barber Motorsports Museum and the upcoming Barber Motorsports Vintage Festival, Robert Panja. I hope I pronounced that right. Robert, welcome to Nostalgic Radio Cars this evening. How are you?
Well, thank you very much. No, you nailed it. Pretty good. You'd be allowed into the family reunion.
So oh, okay. Job. Well, good, good, good. So, anyway, now you're a Texas person, right? Or your tel number is a Texas deal, and you're now in Alabama. So you're kind of still in the South. How's it work for you?
It's working pretty good. We got our our rain covers on any motorcycles outside. We're expecting that, so appreciate the heads up on the storm coming. I hope everybody's safe. But you know, I've been in the South for quite a while, and the opportunity at the Barber Motorsports Museum was what brought me out to Alabama, and I love it out here. The museum is fantastic, and as you said, we've got a couple of amazing, you know, events coming up, and happy to talk about.
Absolutely. Now, what's your background, by the way?
So, I've been in the motorcycle side of the motorsports industry for, gosh, coming on about 30 years. So, I spent about 10 years as a PR manager for Aprilia USA, which for a long time was based out of the Atlanta, Georgia area. So, I lived out that way.
Okay.
And, yep. And then I also took care of Moto Guzzi in that role, and then I spent about 10 years taking care of Victory Motorcycles and Indian Motorcycles, working with the Polaris brand. Then spent a couple of years up in Sturgis, South Dakota, as the COO of the Buffalo Chip up there, the world's biggest party. and then the good folks at the Barber Museum wooed me down by getting to work in the Crystal Palace of motorcycling. So this is where I am, and very excited to be here and talk to you about our event.
Just out of curiosity, Zeke still works for you, right? Super kid, by the way.
Zeke's amazing. He first saw the museum when he was 10 years old. He learned how to weld at 12 to the point that Brian Fuller, the well-known custom builder, took him under his wing. And Zeke and Brian are actually going to be presenters for a seminar. So Zeke just turned 21 and has, I'm certain he has 10W40 for blood. I know it.
No question. Well, now let me ask you a question. When you guys went, when Barber Motorsports was doing something, I think at COTA, were you driving out there with him? Was that a couple, like 3-4 months, 6 months ago, something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually had moved from Austin, Texas. So getting to go back to COTA was kind of hitting the home turf again. And I saw, did get to work with Zeke out there, and we were there for the MotoGP race.
Right.
And we presented some motorcycles that celebrated 75 years of Grand Prix racing. And that's where we took the opportunity to reveal the fact that we had the Kenny Roberts collection is come to the Barber Museum, and we announced him as the Grand Marshal for our Barber Vintage Festival coming up second weekend of October.
Super. All right. Well, tell us a little bit about how that event shapes up and how people can participate and just some of the amazing stuff that goes on.
Well, it's our 19th annual Barber Vintage Fest, and it's amazing because it is really grown organically. It's the way that Mr. Barber likes to operate. It is really just an amazing facility and attitude towards events and that kind of thing. So Mr. B likes to see enthusiasm, and we went from a relatively small sort of word-of-mouth event, and we've grown this event over 19 years to 3 days of awesomeness, and about 80,000 people are going to come through over the course of the weekend. So it's one of the biggest motorcycle events in the U.S., and I would say that the ratio of enthusiast versus like sort of tire kicker is probably one of the best in the world. You're not gonna find more educated and engaged motorcyclists than you will at the Barber Vintage Fest.
So, what are some of the events that take place there?
Well, there's a lot of fun stuff too. We got it is a family event, so we'll underline that. But we've got fun attractions like the Wall of Death and the Ball of Death, also where they're riding around inside the cage, which is awesome. There's stuff for kids to do. There is one of the largest swap meets in the U.S. With over 500 vendors with all kinds of used parts for you name the motorcycle, and there's bits and pieces out there, including complete motorcycles that you can buy and project bikes and stuff like that. We've got a bunch of demo rides going on. BMW is our presenting sponsor for the overall event, so they're running demo rides, of course, but we've got brands like Triumph and Suzuki and even up-and-coming brands like Moto Marini, which have a long history in the world of motorcycling, but they're just coming back with some really neat modern motorcycles. Moto Guzzi is going to be there doing some demo rides, of course, and just really excited for people to come out and not only get to participate in motorcycling through all these different activities, but also to get to watch ARMA Racing, which is the American Historic Racing Association, and Racing Motorcycle Association, sorry. So they do road racing, they're going to have flat track racing, and I'm happy to announce that we've just cut a brand new motocross track right through the trees in the woods, and the motocross track is as beautiful as our road race course is. It's really going to be a spectacular weekend in October.
Now tell me about that. I was up there, I'm going to say earlier this year. Was that track being worked on? I mean, was it started back then? Because I'm trying to envision where it is. I know where the swap meet is, and I know where the kind of like the skid pad is. Whereabouts in relation to all that is the off-road track?
So as you enter the main course, it's on the left-hand side. It's in an area called Lot G. We actually knocked down a whole bunch of trees, and it's hidden by a row of trees, so you really wouldn't notice it as you were driving around. And we're actually cutting in a new pathway. So if you're familiar with where the fan zone is,
yes,
you'll be able to cross over the street and take a pathway down into this motocross track, which is absolutely spectacular.
Interesting. Now, is that open to, let's say, novice, or is that basically scheduled racing that's going to take place there?
Well, our good friends at ARMA are taking care of all that. It's not an open track day. It's not just go out and play,
okay,
Unfortunately. But it is set up for racers. So you want to get your ARMA off-road racing license and that kind of thing set up. You got a couple of weeks left to pull that together. The course is not like modern big heavy high jumps and doubles and stuff like that. It's more of like the traditional outdoor motocross track that you might recognize from like the 50s and 60s and 70s, like rolling hills through the trees. But they cut back the trees in such a way that you can really see a lot of the course. I don't know the exact length of that course, but if I recall, it may be about 1.4 miles. I mean, it's a pretty
substantial. That's a big track.
It is a big track, yeah. And it's got some fast sections and... I'm kind of chomping at the bit to get my knobbies into that track at some point myself.
Oh, you ride quite a bit as well?
Oh, man. My problem is 18 motorcycles and not enough time. So I love it. And any chance I get to throw my leg over two wheels, I take it.
All right. Are you a dirt bike kind of oriented guy or street as well?
No, I consider my garage a Swiss Army knife. So tell me what we're doing, and I'll pull the right tool out, and we'll go have fun.
Oh, okay, cool. I'm more of a dirt bike guy. I'm into the vintage bikes. In fact, I still have my 75 Can-Am MX250 that I've had since 1976.
Well, you change the oil and sign up. Time to go race it. Right?
Yeah. Well, now, how does that work with ARMA? I mean, like, I know in vintage racing, you get your license, everything like that, and then you just go out and they throw a set of rookie stripes on the back of your car, and you go out and everybody stays clear of you. And so how does that work with ARMA? Do they do something similar to that?
Yeah, I think they set up some early, like, novice classes and stuff like that, kind of based on your track experience. And they've got different classes for different types of motorcycles, and they've got different age classes as well, I believe. So those guys over there at ARMA, at their website, are definitely going to have more details than I am off the top of my head. But But we're definitely excited to see the dirt bike world come in and embrace Barber Motorsports Park.
Okay. Well, I was there a number of years ago, and there wasn't any dirt bike guys there, but they were turned loose on the track. And just to be able to run, watch those vintage street bikes and cafe-oriented motorcycles out there on the track, and even small bore stuff. We're talking, you know, 125 to 175, 250cc bikes. Everybody was out there having a great time.
We're seeing a big resurgence in small displacement motorcycles, not only for like custom building, but for cruising around, guys like buffing out like old CT90s and 110s and finding old SLs in the shed and sort of cleaning them up. And, you know, there's I had an opportunity to have a conversation with Kenny Roberts, you know, one of the best known guys in motorcycling who fundamentally changed road racing through the style that he brought in, winning three championships in a row, 78 through 80, right? And he said to me that for his entire career, all he's been trying to do is master his first mini bike, which is really amazing. When you think about a guy who can get on a nasty two-stroke beast of a motorcycle like that TZ750 he rode in Indianapolis, right? And he got off the thing, and he literally said on the microphone, they don't pay me enough to ride that thing. I mean, he was like, it only raced once. Nobody else would throw a leg over that thing. And the fundamentals of motorcycling start with little bikes. And so we encourage parents to get their kids into riding, buy them a Strider bike when they're maybe just under a year old, put it on a rocking horse base and get them familiar with that. And next thing you know, in a few years, you'll be riding off-road with your kid and just having a great time.
Well, that's what I did. I bought a Z50, and when my son was 5 years old, by then he was able to ride a bicycle, and I said, here you go. And I still have that bike. It was a little old Z50. I picked up, he's 27 now. So that's 22 years ago I bought that bike. And in fact, I was thinking, now I can ride that bike around there, right, on the campus there, so to speak, but I just have to wear a helmet. Is that the way that works?
No. Actually, on the perimeter road, you have to have a street-legal motorcycle. So it's got to be legal and registered and insured, and you have to wear a helmet, yeah. If not, you can't have pit bikes. You can have pit bikes inside the paddock area if you're racing Arma in the off-road, and the on-road paddock will be big enough that you might want to do that. But everywhere else around the perimeter road, for everybody's safety,
right,
we want motorcycles that have brake lights and turn signals and people who understand the rules of the road, not necessarily, you know, little kids who are exploring for the first time.
Okay, but so the bike has to be tagged and titled?
Yes, it needs to be a street bike.
Yep. Okay. So what's the other event that you have? There's another event where you encourage people to come up, and there's like camping and people, it's like a big family thing, and you ride around in a lot of small bore bikes and stuff. What's that?
We used to have an event called Small Bore. We don't host that event anymore, but I think we'll be seeing elements of that, like, sort of come back again. Small motorcycles are a big part of the motorcycle community. The other event that's really big and a whole lot of fun is the Indy Car Race, and that comes in typically in May. They're going to be coming back, and so that's a fantastic event, and they do just an amazing job of bringing families out and having family activities, and you're getting to watch these, you know, shrieking, angry Indy cars and barbers is pretty awesome, you know.
Let's talk about the museum. I know you're on a timetable here, but we got about 3-4 minutes left if you want, and talk a little bit about the museum.
Yeah, the museum is just amazing. It's actually six stories. We've got a restoration level, and if you come for one of these major events that we're talking about, we actually open up the restoration level, which is normally closed for the public just because there's equipment moving around and that kind of thing. But we open up the restoration level, and then there's five more levels above that of motorcycles. There's a total of about 1,800 motorcycles in the collection. And any time on the floor, we showcase about 1,100 motorcycles. And we have a new display that features the Kenny Roberts collection. It's our World Champions display. And throughout the museum, we have a whole bunch of World Championship motorcycles. But the World Champion display is like sort of, that's going to be the bullseye if you want to see the best of the best. And we're going to showcase some really neat motorcycles. We've got Bubba Schobert's VFR 750, flying Fred Merkel's bike. We've got Giacomo Agostini motorcycles. We've got John Surtees motorcycles that are all chip bikes.
Wow.
So inside that beautiful, air-conditioned, comfortable facility is just hours and hours of getting to walk around and see motorcycles from over a century of riding, all the way up to modern bikes like supercharged Kawasaki's and you name it. So really excited to have people come in. And if it's their first time coming, wear comfortable shoes, plan to hang out in the museum for a little bit. And I'll give you a couple more insider tips.
Okay.
One is that there's two beautiful bridges that come out of the museum. And the only way you can get onto those bridges is to come through the museum. So Mr. Barber commissioned those specifically so museum visitors get to see this beautiful racetrack. So you definitely want to walk outside and check out the bridges. You cannot get to them from the track side. You can only get to them from the museum. And the other thing is, if you're really a super enthusiast and you're going to end up buying 3 days worth of tickets to get into the museum, you might as well become a member of the museum, because it's only $66, and you can come in and out as much as you want for a year, bringing in guests. You get access to a magazine and members only events and stuff like that. And that's really, I would encourage people to go ahead and get onto our website, which is barbermuseum.org. You can click on the button to become a member. It's a little too late for us to send you your hard card, but you will have your name on the list, and you get to come in and do all the members' activities, including a meet and greet with King Kenny Roberts himself.
Oh, wow. Super. All right, so let me ask you this. Not only is there motorcycles there, which that's probably make the largest portion of the collectibles that are there, but you've got a car collection there as well, and I understand it's one of the most comprehensive Lotus collections in the country.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, we got about 140 cars in the total collection, and about half of those are Lotus race cars and sports cars, and it's actually the largest Lotus car collection in the world. And when Colin Chapman was the guy who started Lotus race cars in England, it's a famous British brand, and we have cars that have been raced by Mario Andretti, Elio De Angelis. We've even got a Lotus race car that was raced by Dick Smothers from Dick and Tommy Smothers, the Smothers brothers.
No kidding.
And yeah, and it's right on display, and it's really cool to see that and the evolution of racing that Lotus represents inside the museum.
Very, very cool. That's cool. I don't remember. Was there a Ferrari on display there too? A Ferrari race car of some kind, or was that did I get that confused with something else?
No. You're exactly right. As a matter of fact, it just got air freighted back. It was in England all summer for two different big events at the Goodwood Festival.
Uh-huh.
And that is John Surtees 1964 Championship Ferrari 158 is what it's called. The 1.5 liter. Eight-cylinder engine, absolutely shrieks, and it's an amazing little car. And Surtees won the championship 60 years ago this year in this car that I swear is just a torpedo with wheels on it when you look at it. It's amazing, and it's going to be back on display in time for the vintage weekend.
Now, this is a Formula One car, correct?
Yeah, it is. He's the only man in the world who has won a championship, world championship, on four wheels and two wheels. And we have both his championship race car and a championship motorcycle in the collection. So you can come in, check that out with a Surtees exhibit, and hopefully everybody comes in and joins us. If you don't come for the Barber Festival on the second weekend of October, just come on by anytime, and I promise you, you'll have a great time.
Now, what do people do about, let's say, they get hungry and they want snacks and food and stuff? Other than run all the way down to the interstate and go hang out at Buc-ee's, is there a place there on premise or on campus, so to speak, where people can get some food and things of that nature?
Absolutely. During the big events, we've got all kinds of food trucks set up in a few different areas around the campus. And when it's a little bit quieter, we've got a little bit of a treat area downstairs in the atrium where you can get yourself a little bit of a snack to hang over. But once you buy your ticket for the day, you can actually come in and out in the day. So if you want to take a break, run down to Bucky's, get one of those big triple-decker sandwiches, and come back. That's perfectly okay by me.
Sounds good. Well, Robert, it's been great to have you on the show. I know you've got a bunch of stuff going on because you're getting ready for this big event. One more time, people want to find out more about Barber Motorsports. Where do they go? How do they find out? Oh, yeah. How much is it, too, by the way? Give us some costs.
There's a few different costs on there, but it's going to be about underneath $100 for you to get in. Best way to find out all the different options is to just get onto the website, which is barbermuseum.org.
Okay. And it has a list of all the events, all the automotive events, all the... You guys also do some school racing there, too. In other words, is it Porsche or somebody that has, like, track time or Porsche school or something like driving school there?
Yeah, exactly right. The Porsche track experience is based there. It is the best track experience in the country at our beautiful racetrack, and they host about 150 days worth of driving instruction there. So you get to drive some really nice cars around the track with some top-notch pro racer level instructors, and even if you've never driven a car fast, they've got a program for you all the way up to training you how to be a sports car racer.
Excellent. Now, real quick, the track is a beautiful course. The property is just unbelievably well groomed. And the track's very technical. How long is the track?
The track's 2.17 miles long, or I think that's right, 2.17 miles long, and it has 17 turns. It has got about 80 feet of elevation changes, so it goes up and down and up and down throughout, and it's got a lot of windy things, not a lot of straightaway, so you're almost constantly turning, accelerating, or braking. There's not a spot where you can really take a breath, you know, so it's pretty... a really fun course, and anybody who takes any sort of driving instruction there, you definitely will leave with a lot more skill than what you came in with.
Sounds excellent. I'll look forward to that myself someday. All right, Robert, well, I'll let you go. Thanks a lot for hanging out with us here at Nostalgic Radio and Cars, and we'll probably see you in a couple weeks.
Absolutely. Thanks for the time. Everybody stay safe out there, and we'll see you second weekend of October in Barber.
Absolutely. All right. Hey, I want to thank my special guest, Robert Panja. I think I pronounced it right, didn't I? The communications director for...
Nailed it twice.
Nailed twice. Good that. Third time I'm going to get a fish, right? All right. So anyway, Barber, communications director for Barber Motorsports. Look forward to seeing you in a couple weeks. Thanks.
Take care.
Super. All right. I'm going to blah, blah, blah for a few minutes, and then we're going to have our other guests come on here in about 5 or 6 minutes. And what was I going to talk about? Besides the storm stuff, which is no big deal. But Barber Motorsports, I got to tell you, I was up there. Well, I've been up there a lot. And I do appraisals for some of the valuations of some of the cars that they take in there. And the collection is absolutely phenomenal. The bikes are absolutely pristine. They're 100% restored. They also have some survivor bikes there. And you don't necessarily have to be a motorcycle fan or a car fan. You really need to Google Barber Motorsports Museum, because I can't think of any other museum in the country that compares to this. The design, the layout, it has a kind of like a spiral walkway that goes from I'm not going to say the ground floor, because the ground floor, the only way to get down there is either steps or through the elevator, because they do have an elevator that goes from the third, four, or five floors. Up on the top floor, they've got a research area there. You can access magazines and a few things like that if you're doing some research on motorcycles. They also have, what's that thing called, when they computer... computer generate parts. What's what I'm thinking of? Can't think of it right now. What am I thinking of there, Ed? That's it. 3D printer. They have a 3D printer. So in other words, you get some of these really rare bikes, and in some cases cars. Jay Leno talks about this all the time on his show, and we've talked about it on our show as well. And so if they can, from a picture, they can actually recreate a part. And once they get that part, and then they kind of hone it down a little bit, and then they take more pictures or however which one they would do, reconfigure, redesign it, then it keeps spitting out itty-bitty little pieces until they actually have the actual part, and then they send it out to, let's say, like a casting company, and let's say it's an aluminum carburetor or something like that, or a bracket or something they need for a motorcycle or a cylinder head or something like that. They can recreate it. And that is pretty impressive. You know, I'm not really necessarily a high-tech guy or anything like that, but I will say that if you're a vintage car guy, motorcycle guy, vintage of any kind of guy, or car parts guy, the fact that they get these 3D printers out there nowadays is pretty impressive. The first time I saw one, I was at SEMA, and it was probably 10, 15 years ago, and they actually had a 3D printer on display at SEMA building a complete entire car. It was pretty incredible. Now, it was plastic, and they said that all you had to do is add a motor and it would run, but they had literally built a full-size vehicle that two people could actually sit in, some little coupe thing. It actually looked like Lego when it was done, but it was kind of neat. And so, you know, that was 10, 12, 13 years ago, whatever it was, and you look at the technology today where they can just make these itty bitty little pieces. But then again, you know, technology is pretty amazing. And so, you know, if you can, if you know, when you can apply it in a practical sense, man, I'm all for it. So, but the Barber Motorsports Museum, just the motorcycles, just the way they're on display up there is pretty incredible. The building's all concrete, glass everywhere, very panoramic, and just like Robert was talking about, when you walk out there on the bridge, you can see the whole track and the whole layout. I mean, it's like you just went to Wonderland. It's, you know how you ever seen a golf course, you know how beautifully a golf course is manicured and everything like that? Well, imagine a road race course with a museum and the facilities nestled in the woods, and it's at Leeds, Alabama, which is just outside of Birmingham. Pretty amazing, pretty impressive. I think if you go there, it's, you know, you use the term breathtaking, it's definitely breathtaking, particularly for a car guy. And so kudos to all the guys that work there, Zeke, Robert, and Mark, another friend of mine that works there, and those guys just do a really, really good, and of course Mr. George Barber himself. So anyway, on that note, I think what we're going to do is we're going to play a little music, and then we'll get our guests on the phone. So given that we have a little stuff going on, the best way that I can sum it up is I think everybody should just relax and be happy, right? Turn into Nostalgic Radio Cars. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Ain't got no place to lay your head. Somebody came and took your bed.
This is Brian Redman, retired racing driver, 9 times road racing champion, still racing at 76, and you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
Okay, we're back, and it's time to introduce our special guest for the evening, our second guest. This gentleman's been on our show before. He's an old friend of ours. I used to see him at Amelia. I'd see him at just a lot of racetrack every once in a while, Sebring, Daytona, places like that. And the legendary David Hobbs, welcome to Nostalgic Radio and Cars. How are you doing this evening, friend?
Thank you, Robert. I tell you, nostalgia, that be happy brought it all. you can't get much more nostalgia than that.
Well, that was a good song. I just figured, you know, it's kind of a cool show tonight, and I want to keep everybody cheerful. We got a storm out there. I just looked at the radar thing, and it's a little further off. Looks like it's making a beeline for Tallahassee, but hopefully they'll be okay up there.
Oh, I hope so. I mean, we got a home in Florida, but it's on the East Coast, and of course, one of these days we're going to be the bullseye. good to talk to you, Robert, and looking forward to the next 20 minutes.
Sure. So let's talk a little bit about, you are the Grand Marshal for
That's just the tip of the iceberg.
For the Chattanooga Motor Car Festival coming up also in 2 weeks. So let's, what are the duties and the responsibilities of a Grand Marshal, by the way, for our listeners?
I'm not absolutely sure, except that on Friday evening,
yeah,
we're going to the Luftgekühlt.
Oh, Luftgekühlt. Okay.
Which is to do with air-cooled Porsches.
Uh-huh.
Luftgekühlt, meaning air-cooled. A tribute to David Hobbs, that's me.
Uh-huh.
then we have a parade to the convention center. Then there's the motor car festival welcome, featuring the Broad Arrow Auctions preview, which should be very, there's going to be a lot of good stuff in that. And then there's a street festival at 8 o'clock, 8:30 to 10 o'clock, by which time I should be in bed. But I mean, then on Saturday, we've got, there's going to be selected cars on parade, and this will be an automobile. This is only going to be a car parade, and you know, I mean, it's just there's a lot of things going on. And on the, obviously on Sunday, it's the Concours d'Elegance, which is always very nice there. And I have to say that I've been to Amelia Island, I've been to obviously Monterey, I've been to the one in Detroit, I've been up to Greenwich Concours. And there's something about the Chattanooga one. The Four Brothers really put on a good show. Of course, they do own the entire heart of town, which includes all the hotels and all the restaurants. So, anyway, it's a great show. I mean, I love it. It's really good fun.
Well, you know, it's really weird because, you know, when you, like you said, when you think of Concours, you think of, we're all familiar with Amelia, we're all familiar with Pebble. What used to be Meadowbrook became St. John's, and now it's, I guess, the Detroit Concours. Greenwich, we're all familiar with that one. And Chattanooga just seemed like an unlikely place to have a concourse, but it's been there now for, what, 5 or 6 years, and it's doing very well.
This will be the fifth one. And yeah, it's a very nice setting for a concourse right downtown there in front of the Western Hotel, which is also part of the DeFore Empire. And they do a good job, and they have some great cars. And obviously, a lot of the top judges are there as well, who you also see at places like Amelia. And, of course, the granddaddy of them all, which is the Monterey one, or the Pebble Beach Concours d'Elegance. But, I mean, yeah, it's... last year they had some fantastic cars. I missed the year when I was away, but it's a great little show, and I can't believe how cheap it is. The tickets are like $20 for 3 days.
No way.
I mean, I'm about to go to the restaurant down the road here, and the salad will be $20.
Well, now, all right. So some of the cars were on the. What about? There's a racing event too, isn't there? A rally or something that takes place? A driving event?
There is a rally on Wednesday and Thursday. They've got rallies.
Okay.
You can count me out of those because Brian Redman, who's also, and I heard his promotion of your show, which put me off just a bit.
You guys are buddies.
Exactly. I'm in Elkhart Lake at the moment, and he's going to be here on Thursday and Friday putting together a brief, not a commercial, but a brief video of the 917 that he owned way back in the, well, it'd be the 70s.
Right.
And then he sold it to Richard Atwood, who was the first winner of Le Mans in a Porsche overall. They'd won the class many times. And Richard, who I was an apprentice with at Jaguar Cars in the late 50s, and that car has since been bought by,
in California? It's not Canepa's car, is it?
No, it's not Canepa. It's the comedian.
Seinfeld.
Anyway, and they're going to sell it, I think, next year.
Really?
They're putting together some sort of video. And they're going to be up here at Road America on Thursday and Friday with Brian driving it, standing by it, gassing about it, and generally flaunting himself and the car for sale next year. So I'll probably see him if he can deign to bring himself around to our house.
Let me ask you a question. So in 1970, what were you racing for our listeners?
In 1970... my main program was I raced a Formula 5000 in America.
Okay.
And for John Surtees. So that was a part-time job, unfortunately, and I came third in the championship. And then I also raced at Le Mans in 1970 in a 917 with Mike Harewood for Gulf and Porsche. Well, the Porsche cars were run by John Wire in Gulf colors. And Mike Harewood and I were driving the third car. First car was being driven by Brian and Joe...
Atwood.
Who?
Atwood, wasn't it?
No. 1970, Atwood was driving with Hans Herrmann, who'd come second the year before.
Well, wait a minute. They were driving the Austrian Porsche 23917 that won Le Mans in 1970, correct?
Yes.
Okay, that was...
I was in a car. I was in another 917 that year with Mike.
Okay.
And both of our cars were the old 4.5 liters. And the factory cars were 5 litre.
Oh.
But they both blew up. Brian Redman and Joe Stifford. And I can't remember who drove the other two. Anyway, but Mike and I were doing very well. We were running super strong. And unfortunately, Mike, who was a tremendous driver, and of course was a 9-time world champion on motorbikes, took to cars very well. And he was driving, and it started to rain at about 8 o'clock-ish on Saturday night. And he decided to do one more lap on the slicks.
Oh.
Well, unfortunately, he did not complete the lap. And he and I returned to the Hotel de France in La Chasse-sur-Loire and got completely hammered. Which we could, if we'd won it, we could have done that the next night, but it would have been much more meaningful being hammered.
Oh, yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Now,
was it 68 or 69? Weren't you in one of the four GTs, 40s?
Yes, 68 and 69.
Okay.
In 68, I drove with Paul Hawkins.
Okay.
And we led the race for a bit. Unfortunately, the clutch flew apart, so we were out. And Rodriguez and... John Devine won. Not John, Oliver and...
Ickx.
No.
Jackie Oliver won, right. And then Ickx won in 69, right?
Ickx won in 69 with Jackie Oliver, yeah.
Well, okay.
But the year before, it had been won by Rodriguez and French driver Joe Schlesser.
Schlesser, yes.
Yeah. So me and Paul, again, were relegated and not finishing. Then in 69... Mike and I were doing very well. We were leading the other car by a lap. And then in the middle of the night, about 5 o'clock, I had a brake issue. And they said, oh, it's pads. And I said, no, it's not pads. They said, you just drive and we'll do it. And anyway, they buggered about. And of course, we lost the lap because it was, in fact, a hole in the brake pipe, which they changed the pads. And I went out again knowing it wasn't going to work. And of course, it didn't. So I had to come in again, and they did the whole fold roll again. And we fell behind the other car. So in the end, we finished third. Mike and I finished third in 69.
Now, is that basically still considered a podium finish then?
Oh, yeah, it was a podium, yeah.
Okay.
But, of course, the podium then was just sort of standing, mulling around in the crowd. You know? Well, actually, it was a bit of a balcony, but it was pretty small. And then I finished third again in 84 with Sorrel Vandermeer. Yeah, so it's a great race. If anybody listening to this nostalgia radio station has not been to Le Mans, you should go. I mean, it's a bit of a... you got to get there, and it's a great circuit. I love it. It's got some tremendous... I mean... you're lapping at 150 mile an hour all the time, day and night. And there's a lot of fast corners, a lot of long straights. And obviously there's a couple of sort of semi-hairpins. They're not real hairpins. But, I mean, it's a super fast track. And it's long, 8.5 miles. So, you know, for a driver, it's great. You really feel like you're going somewhere. Whereas in the Daytona, 24-hour, you know, I mean, it's a 3.5 mile track around a fishbowl, really. And, you know, it's not very exciting.
Well, the infield, that would be about it, right?
Yeah, the infield is good. And of course, when I started doing the 24-hour, it was dark in the infield. And I mean very dark.
Uh-huh.
But now, of course, the whole circuit is floodlit. So it kind of takes away that whole mystique of doing 24 hours day and night. It's daylight all the bloody time.
Well, you mentioned the Formula 5000. Did you ever strap into a Shadow by any chance?
No, I never did. Somebody told me the other day that Don Nichols had asked me to drive for it, but I don't remember that. But Jackie Oliver was sort of basically the man there. And, yeah, I mean, those Shadows were pretty nice cars. I mean, in Formula 1, George Bulmer got a third place and one of the best results for an American driver for years in a Shadow, in a Grand Prix. So they were pretty useful cars. And it would have been nice to have driven one, but I was fairly game with Floyd at the time anyway, so. But I never did drive a Shadow. And of course, this year, they were all over in England for the Festival of Speed at Goodwood, and then the Goodwood Revival. So, including the Can-Am cars, which of course never raced anywhere but in the USA. So they've had a bit of a worldwide entrance this year.
Speaking of Can-Am, did you drive, you drove a couple of Can-Am races, didn't you?
Well, my Can-Am career was a bit like my Formula One career. Not very good. Well, the first year I came up here to Road America.
Uh-huh.
And I raced the Formula 5000. And it was a very short race. I blew up. But some guy had spotted me, and he thought I looked fairly promising. So later that year, I did in fact drive my first Can-Am race right here in Road America in the Mack Tool Special, which would have been in 69. It would have been a McLaren Mark 1 or 2, right? And I don't remember whether I finished the race or not, but that was my first Can-Am. And then in 71, I drove for Tony Dean. I drove his car a couple of times. He had a McLaren. His was a production car, not made by McLaren, made by Trojan, who made the production cars. And then in 72, I drove the factory Lola, which was a Lola T310, that flat thing. The Speed, it was sponsored by Speed. And it was very unique looking, but it was also very unique handling. In other words, it wasn't very good. And then in 73, I drove for Roy Woods, and I drove Peter Revson's car from the year before. It was the last of the McLaren Can-Ams, it was an M20, and it was an absolutely fabulous car. And when I drove that, I could see why McLaren had won the championship every year from 67 until 71, when Roger appeared with Mark Donohue and then George Folmer in the
Porsche 917K.
Porsche 917, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was a great car to drive. And one of the best drives I ever had was at Watkins Glen in 73, when I finished second to Mark, who had the luck by then, had the 917-30, which was a longer wheelbase and a lot more horsepower and generally better car. And I beat all the 917-10s.
Wow.
So that was a good day out for me now.
So if you could go back in time, race-wise, what would be one of the most memorable races, most challenging, with good results for you?
Well, that would be one of the Can-Am race. You know, second to and beating all those 917s, which had people like Jody Scheckter, Brian Redman, Peter Gregg, Curly Hayward. Some pretty good guys there. One of my really early, this would be right off your radar. I went to a place called Alton Park in England in 1961 when I was driving my low sleep. Now, this car had that automatic transmission. Now, being automatic, I meant it was automatic, but it was also semi-automatic, so you could override the automatic and select gears at will. Like you can today, but nobody could in those days. And I raced in three races. a race in the GT race up to 1100, the GT race up to 1500, and sports car race up to 1500. And I won them all. And one of the reasons I won the sports car race in the wet was because I took the racing tyres off and put some Michelin X-Road tyres back on it and won the race.
No kidding.
That was a good day out. But I also had a tremendous race with a guy called Denny Holm, who won a lot of Can-Am races over here and also won the World Championship in 1967. And in 1963, he and I were driving in Formula Junior in the UK. And we went to Silverstone to the big May race. Not the Grand Prix. It was a full Formula One race. I mean, all the factory cars were there. Because there used to be quite a few non-championship races in those days, because the championship only actually comprised of about 7 or 8 races. So they had plenty of time for non-championship races. And this was one of those weekends. And it was a Silverstone, and I was in the Formula Junior, which had about 45 cars in, including people like Mike Spence, Richard Atwood, Paul Hawkins, Frank Gardner, Denny Howell, me, and everybody in Formula Junior who mattered was there, most of whom, or a lot of whom, went on to be Formula One drivers. And Denny and I just had the most amazing race and pulled right away from this field, completely pulled away, just the two of us. And I passed him a couple of times, and he passed me, and I passed him, and I knew I didn't win. And with about 3 laps to go, the gear lever broke off in my hand. So I had a little stump of a gear lever about half an inch long. And obviously I dropped back. But then I kind of sussed out to push it.
Hello, David?
And to go back from third to fourth, I'd pull it back with my finger. And on the last lap, I broke the lap record and finished about 8/10 of a second behind. So that was a pretty good race.
Super. Well, David, we're up against the flag. Not the black flag, the checkered flag. Okay,
oh, so checkered flag. Okay.
The checkered flag. We like checkered flags. We don't like black flag. Black flags when we got to come in, you know, sit out a lap. But we'll have to do this again. But I'm gonna try to get my happy body up there to Chattanooga because I've been, you know, threatened if I don't show up there one of these days. And of course, you know, I want to hit some of the East Coast stuff, and so I want to see that. And we'll sit down, we'll chat, we'll tell some stories, and I want to have you back on the show again and tell some of the stories about some of the European racing that was going on back in the day, because that's all the fun stuff.
Well, you couldn't choose a better place to go in October, because Chattanooga in October, the weather's usually pretty good, and it is a fabulous little show, and everybody loves it there.
Super. And it's the Chattanooga Motor Car Festival. And if they want to find out more about it, they can go to ChattanoogaMotorFestival.com, correct?
And it's October the 11th to the 13th. And you can buy a 3-day ticket for a mere $20.
That's amazing.
There's other events you have to buy tickets for, but, you know, it's a great show. So I recommend it wholeheartedly.
Super. Well, David, you have a great time. Hopefully you can give Brian tell him I said hi, and give him some grief. Anyway,
okay.
We'll talk to you later.
All right,
rub it in on him. All right, very good. Hey, thanks. I want to thank my special guest, David Hobbs, legendary race car driver, GT race car driver, formula driver, all that good stuff. In the meantime, I want to thank all my listeners for checking in or tuning in here. Nostalgia Getting Cars every Tuesday between 7 and 8 p.m. on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Don't forget to tell your friends, get out to drive your cars, go check out our website where there's a bunch of car shows coming up. The Chattanooga Motor Car Festival is going to be super. We got other stuff going on, the Barber Motorsports, and a big shout out to all my friends, especially my friends over at Fastlane Travel, because they're doing some European driving stuff. And meantime, oh yeah, Cop Cars Online, big shout out to Mark and those guys. Buy yourself a classic cop car. In the meantime, stay safe, drive carefully, and love your family.